It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Unafeared, here on Declare Your Independence. I'm here in Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful studios of Freedom's Last, Freedom's Phoenix, on our com. Ooh, that was a good one. I'll keep that one. All right. Here we have Michael Heiss that is has come on the show, explain it to us. Now, it's first, God, man, let's make sure I got his name right. Hi, Michael, say your last name so we all got it emblazoned in our memory.
Heiss.
Got it right. Yay, I win. All right. So Michael Heiss, I had met before a couple years ago at least, at a Nexus Earth conference in Aspen, Colorado. At the time, they were recruiting and looking for people to run for the LNC, to be, you know, on the team Mises of whatever they're going to something. And I was like, you know, interesting. I'm glad you guys are doing it. You know, let me know if you need some help. Let me know and whatever. And I kind of, yeah, it's Libertarian Party crap, you know. So I always go, and I've run for national chair a gazillion times. But they already had somebody in mind for that, and they're going to do whatever they were going to do. So I'm like, you know, peace out. But I was there, had, you know, something to say this about that. And my only comment was I ran for member at large just so I could say I'm not really worried about the executive committee or LNC anymore, because from 15% to well over a third or more, 40% of the delegates kind of getting that, you know, voluntarist, leave me alone, real libertarian thing going on. And if I'm going, so I'm not worried about, you know, the part or the body, the people, as much as, you know, as long as the activists are represented in some way, as long as they're autonomous state by state and they can do whatever the heck they want. Because that's the spontaneous order that we've seen with the Levolution and many other things that I experienced here in Arizona. That's where the power is the individuals. But an individualistic party like the Libertarian Party, they don't act that way. You know, and it, like any political machine, it attracts, you know, the ones that need a shiny badge to fill the void in their chest or something. There's something going on. And as time has gone on, I'm starting to realize there's a lot of sociopaths in politics. I mean, they just freaking will take advantage of these young, creative, enthusiastic minds and say whatever they think they need to tell them to get support for them to do whatever the heck it was. But as time goes on and you have reputation becomes, it precedes you when you have the internet and then blockchain and then you have, you know, non-state issued IDs and reputation of I already know and I've seen all your Twitters from tweets from forever. So it's changed, and it's only activists that have been around for decades that before the internet that's seen why it's changed and can predict into the future what's coming. Jacob Hornberger from the Future Freedom Foundation is one of those people. He started the Future Freedom Foundation when I had first started hearing of the word libertarian. What the hell is that? You know, so you got to read Atlas Shrugged, and it usually begins with Ayn Rand, and here's your Freedom Daily from the Future of Freedom Foundation, okay? So this is, I've grown up in this movement from 20, you know, 8 whatever years old back in the day with Jacob Hornberger explaining it to me and a lot of other writers that he's had on Future of Freedom Foundation. So him running for president was, for me, another Ron Paul thing. I'm going, I already know where this goes, you know. Well, nobody's heard of him, and he hasn't been elected to federal office. Yeah, don't care, okay? So I want to get with Michael here and talk about the Mises Caucus inside the Libertarian Party. And what does it take to be the Mises Caucus inside the Libertarian Party? You go, I'm in the Libertarian Party and I just started the Mises Caucus, so get over it. You know, here we go. Now, the support, by calling it the Mises Caucus, I would imagine, like what happened in New Orleans in the 16 election cycle, or 18 election cycle, it was down the street, within, I don't know, a quarter mile, half mile or less, down the street, the Mises Caucus had their own little convention thing, and it was heavily attended, and it scared the crap out of the Libertarian Party. They'll say they weren't scared. I was there. They were scared. Okay, they were worried whatever the hell it was they thought you might be doing. What you did is you demonstrated that there was a lot of support for a principled, no compromise position. And what the hell are we doing with this Bill Weld crap? Are you kidding me? Okay, well, of course, he went Republican, never Trump, of whatever the heck is going on there. I don't care. Okay, so here we have the Mises Caucus was developed, and I think I know where it came from and why. I'm going to tell this story. And then it's going to be all Michael. You ready, Michael?
Let's do it.
All right, here you go. Here it is. There was Nick Sarwark, that is the national chair of the Libertarian Party, an unprecedented third term. You know, he runs a good convention. He's got it going. He keeps the control, kind of, you know, make the trains run on time. But he gets what he wants, and it's behind the scenes, I guarantee it. And you listen to the shows that I've done with him. He's out in the open about it. If you saw the debate between David Smith and him, you kind of get this is what we've been screaming all this time, is that principle is practical. It is the only way the libertarians are ever going to blah, 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 blah. Principle, uncompromising, here it is, and this is it, and that's, you know, Ron Paul, Jacob Hornberger. It's going to be, you know, our shorter, darker-haired version of Ron Paul. And, you know, here it comes. Now, the thing is that Tom Woods, Mises, you know, with the crowd here. Now, we had Jeff Dice, the president of the Mises Institute, this morning on. I know Jeff well. He was chief of staff for Ron Paul's congressional office. There's Ron Paul, Lou Rockwell. I have Lou Rockwell's stuff all over the place. Been on the show many times. Walter Block, Tom Woods, Bob Murphy, Stephen Kinsella. I mean, these are the crowd. These are the stalwarts of the libertarian philosophy, and they'll explain it to you. Well, the Mises Institute, all these guys as individuals, they can't endorse anybody or anything, but the Mises Caucus can. So this is all the support. You know, I just know it was gravitating towards Jacob Hornberger running. Last May, I had Jacob Hornberger on the show, and he you know, was going, yeah, I was at this Libertarian convention, this Libertarian, after about three of them, I said, sounds to me like you're running for Presidente. Are you guys, no, wouldn't be prudent at this juncture to talk an FEC of what I go. Sounds more like you're running for Presidente. You know? So this was not like a big giant secret to me, but he couldn't announce because he follows laws and stuff and whatever. I don't care. So this is not kind of an open secret for a while, but now it's not a secret anymore. And he's running. What happened to create the Mises Caucus? Tell me when I'm wrong here. Nick Sarwark made some critical tweet about Tom Woods that gave some economic speech and said something about Rothbard. It had nothing to do with politics or whatever. Nick Sarwark saw an opportunity to come out as national chair of the Libertarian Party and say, you know, yeah, the only thing you learned from Rothbard was a failed political strategy of never getting elected, a blah, 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 or something, and you need practical politics like I'm going to tell you in Bill Weld of something, right? I know what the hell he was. What the heck? And when that happened, I don't pay attention to this crap, but it came across my desk. People, ooh, look what Nick said. And I'm like, what the hell is that about? And this was like midweek on, you know, some week. By that Friday, I have had, by within 2 weeks, I had had Nick, Tom Woods, Bob Murphy, Ron Paul, bunch of the guys on, what the hell is this about? Why is he talking? Why would he do this? It's the old fight from back in the day of the Coctopus and these guys that see liberty as a suitcase full of influence that they can, you know, run around on campuses or young people or whatever to get their energy policies done of something, how you're going to run the government the way they want or something. They've been trying to take over the party since 1980 or before. This has been a big thing with them, and they can't get away from them damn libertarians in there that just want principle and such. So I am of the opinion that they took this swipe at Mises and Tom in particular and the Mises Institute and Rothbard because they hate the fact that there's guys like Michael that believe this stuff, that want to have this stuff. It's just been a thorn in their side to get control of the third largest party and 50-state ballot status. What do you think this Weld thing was all about? So I'm just going, to never Trump. All this kind of crap and vouching for Hillary's. I'm like, when are we going to learn? And Barr and all that. Ew. So when they did this, it pissed them off enough. Mises has an event at the New Orleans convention down the street. And they were afraid they were going to organize and do it. And these kind of started late. So maybe that. But now we're going into a presidential election cycle with a candidate like Jacob Hornberger. The Mises caucus is going to say hello. How far off am I, Michael?
You're pretty on. And that's certainly how it appears from the outside. The ironic thing is that we actually weren't a response to all of that. And I can understand why it looks that way, but I had actually been kicking around the idea of the Mises Caucus for a couple months and hadn't started it.
Well, that was a good opportunity.
Where it gets really mysterious is I finally said, screw it, I'm going to make the group, we'll see what happens. Made a group on Facebook. Hours later that same day is when that first salvo was launched from Nick. And so we just happened to kind of organically, basically accidentally absorb the fallout.
Whoa, you mean he... On the same day that you guys kind of announced this is when that happened?
Yeah, and it happened on Twitter.
You think it might have been because of it?
No, because it happened on Twitter, and I don't use Twitter. So I was completely unaware. Well, my point is I was completely unaware that this was happening, and I wasn't like a well-known activist in the party. I mean, they didn't know that I had been active in the Liberty Movement for like a decade. It was networked. But as far as they were concerned, I came out of nowhere. And so, and it didn't even come out. I mean, we used that opportunity. That is certainly good fuel to get people into the party to change things. But the main motivation was really to try to blow on the embers of the Ron Paul revolution and get our people fired up. Because my observation over all this time, I'm 30 years old. I got started when I was about 18, 17, 18. I was listening to Alex Jones when I was 14. You know, so I've been around for a little bit in the activist scene. And I want my movement back. I want the feeling of the revolution back. That's the main thing. That was like the best time of my entire life.
Yeah.
And it was so much fun. There was so much connection, so much networking. Every time you met a libertarian, it's like you met a new best friend. And I want that back. And I got to thinking about the Mises Caucus after the Johnson campaign because, you know, I held my nose and voted for Johnson. And I... You know, I even worked a poll for him, and that was kind of my entryway into the party.
Hold my nose crap.
I don't
advocating
think I
for
now.
Taxes, got to bake the cake, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, and Bill Weld, I'm like, we're done. You know?
Yeah, I don't think I would do that now. That was my first entry into the party. I never, even with Ron Paul, I never got involved in the GOP. I mean, I registered to vote for him in the primaries, but that's it. It was really my first foray into party politics at all. And I just got to comparing the Ron Paul revolution with my experience with the Gary Johnson campaign, and it was completely night and day. So the big thesis that I came to was that Ron Paul essentially initiated a positive feedback loop with his bravery, with his courage, with his consistency, with his outspoken truth, and all of these things that gave us moral victories to where I was out in the streets bullhorning. I'd never done anything like that. People were dropping out of work. People were dropping out of school, just dropping everything to get behind this guy and get behind this message. And that was not at all what the Gary Johnson experience was like. So my theory is that...
No, that was controlled opposition. That was to make sure that it didn't take off.
Right. And my theory is that with Ron, it's easy to kill a campaign, an individual in one campaign. A campaign ends. But if we were somehow ever to reignite that positive feedback loop under the guise of an organization, you can't kill an organization the way you can kill a campaign. So if we ever initiated that feedback loop again, technically the revolution never has to die. And that's what I want.
Okay, this is my admonishment and warning and whatever and Ernie said and mark your calendar kind of thing. Here we call it Steiger's Law. It's long story wide, doesn't matter. But the way the saying goes is whenever you create an organization or a group around a movement or a cause, sooner or later, the organization becomes more important than the reason you created it every single time. So you got to be careful in how you organize something. Is it like spontaneous order of the Lovolution, or is the Mises Caucus got, you know, like a chair and a shiny badge and a 501 pack of C something or whatever? What are we looking at?
We are a pack now. We created a pack about 6 months ago, and there's nothing like what we're doing in the party. And we actually have Ron Paul's endorsement. Tom Woods has been very, very supportive.
I don't care about that. I want to know how it's organized. How do you have the pack organized? Who's in charge of what?
I am the chair, and then we have an executive committee, and we hold meetings, we do proposals, and right now we're coming up on almost 200 donors to the tune of $2,600 a month coming up. And what we do with that money is we're a hybrid pack. So there's two bank accounts. All the recurring donations that we're getting are going into the traditional pack. So what that is used for is to give financial assistance to exclusively local level libertarian candidates around the country. So that's what we're doing there. And then on the other side, the super pack, we're raising money to then pay activists to get involved in issue coalitions. So, for example, we got involved with the effort to decriminalize shrooms in Denver, Colorado. And I think we helped put that over the top. It was a very slim victory. And we got activists out there. We got the LP of Colorado to endorse it. We got people knocking doors, all this stuff. And that has created some really cool ripple effects to where we got into the budding psychedelic decriminalization movement at the ground level. And now we're going to be a part of that moving forward. So that was the first thing we did on the issue side. Now we have a contract with Jose Nino, who actually writes for the Mises Institute and a few other places, to organize and manage an effort to introduce gun rights protection legislation in five towns in Texas, and kind of utilizing the narrative that's going on down there of, well, the Democrats are going to take over the state, our gun rights are under threat. So, you know, the two issues that we're leading off are guns and psychedelics, and then we already spent about $6,000.
Guns and weed.
Guns and shrooms.
Well, you know, the thing is that, you know, drugs and guns and whatever, and how they don't overlap. Yeah, they do. They're a freedom thing. But in the 90s, the National Libertarian Party in Arizona here, we have SAFE, Second Amendment is for everyone. Are you a safe gun owner? Are you an unsafe legislator? I mean, you know, that kind of thing. So you go to safegunowners.com or you'll see where it is. But our whole thing is that we understood these freedom issues were important and be able to understand libertarianism and our values. And we would push it, but the National Libertarian Party, they would make fun of us, and you're not allowed. We got to change. You guys are bad. You're bad because you're not. You need to sneak into nonpartisan office. You know, make them think you're a Republican or something, and then you'll be there and you'll vote Libertarian. You know, that kind of crap. And we're going, nope, nope, nope. If you don't have the people understanding freedom and them experiencing it, why you need it, even if you got elected, it wouldn't mean anything because it wouldn't last. I mean, you have to have general public opinion. Well, this started, I remember Colorado with the marijuana thing. It was Breckinridge with a friend named Joby Weeks there in the summer getting signatures for Breckinridge to decriminalize marijuana. Then boom, it went statewide. Then boom, we got mushrooms. And I'm going, woohoo! You know, this is based on what? You know, based on I owe myself a bite me. You know, then you have guns. Well, now they got a movie, Guns and Weed. This is the National Libertarian Party, for some reason, and I don't, is it intentional they don't get it, or are they controlled in some way that they, them, those, you can buy the party for $10,000 placed at the right time in the right hands of somebody, you know, going, yeah, we kind of need you to do this and not talk about that, and we're going to get whatever the hell it is that they want. And what they want is it not the spark. And all of a sudden, like I use Jesse Ventura as an example, all of a sudden here's an independent guy. He's governor of Minnesota. And they went, what the hell happened? So the CIA bring him down in the basement after he became governor, had a little meeting with him. He came here in Arizona in the Senate Republican Majority Caucus room at Arizona State Legislature here and told this story, and we got the videotape of it. And he said they have a central intelligence guy at a deputy level in every state house, sure as heck in mine, and they brought me down, and they wanted to know one thing. How the hell did you win? They, but what the hell? Berlin wall fell, we didn't know about, what the heck is going on? That's what I'm afraid that they're afraid of. They're afraid of the Mises Caucus, all of a sudden spontaneous order of the next levolution of Jacob Hornberger, and hell no, they got to have guys inside and the gaslighting of, are you sure you want to do that? I don't know. That sounds kind of crazy, you know? So I can feel it. So I'm just like, head down, plow, I don't care. I don't want to play all this internal game of I don't care. But Jacob Hornberger, I already know what he's going to say. The same thing Ron Paul said. They go, well, you're a libertarian. Yeah, and you're really fascist. You know, so, you know, let's get over it. So,
and you know what the next move is going to be. I don't know if you've seen the stories, but the next move is going to be they're going to try to shove Lincoln Chafee down our throats.
Who?
Lincoln Chafee. He was independent governor in Rhode Island, and he's been Republican, Democrat, you know. He's been all over the spectrum.
So what do you mean you're going to shove it in our face? What do I care about? Why do you even mention that name? What does that mean?
Well, it's looking like he's probably going to run for president. He's probably going to be the new Bill Weld. And it looks like...
Oh, as a libertarian?
And it looks like members of leadership are even out there to this day still trying to pine for Bill Weld to come back. And
because they showed him gazillions of dollars. They waved that carrot in front of him and say, looky-see. Oh, yeah, right. Man, it's a money. It's kind of...
Where things get really interesting is you had mentioned that we were running a chair candidate before. That guy's name is Joshua Smith, good friend of mine. Now he didn't win the chair race, but he did get on as a LNC at large member, and we actually helped get a few people elected to the LNC. And Josh is now using you know his networks, using our audience, the connections that we've made with Tom Woods and all these other people. Josh is far and away the biggest recruiter in the party right now, more than the rest of leadership combined and double. And that's reflecting on us. You know, we're bringing people to the party in droves right now. And it's with our message of trying to reignite the
you're bringing delegates to the convention.
Yeah. We're actually, that's going to be on our next meeting is buying Airbnbs for people who need financial assistance. We already have spreadsheets, people who are interested, people that we're trying to help, targeted emails around, you know, convention dates, and you have to register with your state party by this date. And so, yeah, we're doing it. I mean, we're going to, when you're making $2,600 a month, that might not be great in the grand scheme of things politically, but in the LP scheme of things, there's nobody else who's doing anything like this.
No, $2,600 a month, I can change the world. You know, I was you. You know, I was you back in the day. It was always $200 and $2,000. That's what it always was. If I had $200, man, I could, the timing up. If I had $2,000, it was the timing up. If you have a couple of $1,000 that you can count on that you can put towards something, yeah, you can get some stuff done. You know, and you guys are going in the right direction. Plus, you have a lot more support from people that is worth way more than whatever monetary value. Because,
right.
You know, that's what a lot of people didn't understand with the Levolution. You know, there's hundreds of millions of dollars worth of stuff. The R's and D's, they'll spend tens of millions, $100 million just to make it look like they have, you know, $10 million worth of grassroots effort.
You can't buy heart.
Amen.
You know, you can't buy passion, and you can't buy belief.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and get down to some, you know, kind of inside party politics and kind of stuff. My experience has been that either you are supported by those on the LNC or the top executive of somebody they know they just need to talk to, whatever. Because when you're talking about the third largest party in the United States of America that could be a cane maker, that even 1 or 2% can determine who becomes presidente, you know, look at what happened with, you know, the popular vote between Hillary and Trump. I mean, it wasn't that much. In fact, Hillary got more, you know, it was the Electoral College that Trump focused on. But if they could change one state with just a few percent, oh man, that makes you kingmaker. And I guarantee it is not lost on these guys. They're definitely doing, paying attention to the Libertarian Party process. So you have a lot of candidates. I've had a lot of them on the show, and there's going to be more and whatever. Jacob Hornberger is a different animal because he has such a long pedigree. He didn't just come to this. This is a 30-year thing that I know of, and I've known him. He's spoken at a couple of our Freedom Summits. I've been to, you know, different functions he's spoken at. I had him on the show a lot, read his stuff. I mean, you know, the Future Freedom Foundation and their Freedom Daily was, you know, on my coffee tables for years. This is not going to be what I think the Libertarian Party regulars think it's going to be. Is the campaign going to start after the nomination, or does it start now?
It needs to start now, and that's what I'm working to get to happen. Now, I should probably say, just for the record, that we're going to interview multiple candidates, and we're not endorsing anybody at this moment. But I will say that I, as an individual, am very supportive of Jacob. Pretty much everybody else on the board feels the same way. He has a very strong base of support from our audience. So, we will probably end up supporting him, but just for as a formality.
Well, he'd have to say something really stupid, you know, or somebody else be really better than Jacob. I don't know how that's going
to
happen.
But, you know, it needs to start now. And, I mean, I just spent today reaching out to – I'm trying to find articles and find the Ron Paul delegates, you know, remember the Maine and, you know, the Minnesota delegation and the Nevada delegation. And I'm trying to find these people, and I'm trying to reach out to the old Ron Paul campaign staff.
Well, I have their numbers in case you want them.
yeah, I need that because this is the
after
thing.
The show. You and I we'll stop. Like, you got to go like 15 after, so we'll stop like 5 minutes before, and I'll hook you up with, you know, whatever I can. But the thing is that I'm looking for, and this is where Scott Horton and I kind of, you know, had a little bit of a difference of opinion. I am of the opinion that Jacob is an early threat to these guys. They, them, those. Who are they, Ernie? Who are they? I'll tell you who they are. You want to know who they are? I'll tell you who they are. There are those that just want to be left alone, and there are those that just won't leave them alone, okay? Well, how do I know who the bad guys are? They won't leave me alone. You know, so these guys, they, them, those, they are threatened by you and the popular, so, and me and Scott and everybody else that's part of this revolution. Hell, even Ron Paul himself, okay, and the Mises Caucus and so on, because they can see that the LNC and the Libertarian Party that is not in convention do not control the convention. The people control the convention. I got a whole bunch of, you know, examples of that. So when you go into the convention in Austin, Texas this coming year, it's going to be very interesting for me to see all the machinations that has already happened way back here. And one of those is going to be in the first quarter in 2020, before the end of March, by April Fools. I did this kind of gentleman's kind of, he didn't take the bet. But, you know, just for people to check, you put in your calendar April 1st. All right? There is going to be an attempt to discredit Jacob Hornberger on a national level, come after, oh my God, you can't believe this guy said this about that on Fox, CNN, MSA, something, something, in big article or something. Because they cannot have him do what we know he's going to do, which is kick the living crap out of them, even if he's not in the debate. So I know this is coming. There is going to be a smear effort of Jacob Hornberger before April. They have to. Because if they don't, it's going to build and do the same thing that the Ron Paul revolution did and build up, and it's going to be out of their control. They think they got control with Google and Facebook and all this other crap that they're doing, but what the hell you think we've been working on IPFS for? There is going to be a mechanism and a way to share information between the revolutionaries, and the general public will go that way too, because they can't find the truth anymore. This is amazing to me that people don't see this coming, because they're always fighting the last war. Technologically, where are you guys going to be on this?
On technological, what do you mean?
The campaign. What kind of cool software goodies platform of decentralized? Are you guys just going to go, oh, we're going to have a Facebook page? Is that it? I mean, what?
Oh, the campaign? I mean, I'm not privy to everything that's going on with the campaign.
You think the revolution had anything to do with the campaign?
Gotcha. So, no. We plan on having a CRM. We're going to walk into convention with mass tech.
CRM. What's a CRM?
Customer relations management. So I mean, you can use it for businesses, but you can, there's also versions of this that are used for politics as well. And it's basically a one-stop shop for recruiting people, keeping in contact for people, managing all of the data, managing all of the interactions and emails and all that stuff. It's expensive, but we're building towards it. And it would even just that would give us a huge advantage over the competition. And as far as, you know, we need to get Jacob to win first and foremost, because the party isn't going to give it to him. He still has to go around and he's got to schmooze and he's got to go to state conventions and he's got to talk to delegates and he's got to shake hands. He's got to do all this stuff and win a convention because there's other candidates. And I believe that Hornberger is the best one. But, you know, there's people out there who, you know, Kim Ruff, she's a solid candidate and she's a longstanding party activist. And there's people who really value that. And there's nothing wrong with that. My point is, it's not going to be given to him. So we're trying to already kind of formulate our plan to make sure that he gets it, getting those Airbnbs, getting people out, getting mass tech software so that right from the floor of the convention, boom, the vote's happening in 5 minutes out to all of our delegates. You know, get your ass in the hall. You know, the socialists are putting this stupid resolution up. We have to vote against that or, you know, whatever. And out organize the competition, because like I said, and I really mean it, there's nothing going on in the party like what we're doing at all. And
you're right, but there was, I saw it with libertarians. All right, this is what happened. That's a long story. Bottom line, I recommended some guys here out of Arizona for the Ron Paul campaign because I didn't want to have anything. Nope, hell no, because I know I got to advocate for voting. You want me to go Republican? You want that? Not going to happen. I got my own plan. I know what I'm doing. Peace out. So that became the Levolution. Well, the same thing with Jacob Hornberger. You know, there's, you know, we got a list and we want you on the list and kind of be in the list and kind of go, let me tell you what I know. One, you're going to want me off the list within a few weeks. Two, you know, there's going to be limitations and I got to do an FEC requirement of kind of, yeah, hell no, I don't fill out paperwork. It ain't happening. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to do some butt whipping. What shall I do? I don't know, but it's going to be something creative. So we got some ideas, and we're doing, I'll share some, a little bit of this with you. But the main thing is to help you. I do not want to be in a position to where the organization or the effort starts to seep in what is needed by the organization rather than why we're doing it, which is not even Jacob Hornberger, as the Levolution was not about Ron Paul, and he understood that. It was about the philosophy and keeping him up on that stage. People were on my butt about, you know, precinct committee, walking this and doing kind of in the way the structure of and the nomination and delegates of the I don't care. I freaking don't care. That wasn't my thing. My thing was, how long could I keep Ron Paul up on that podium? That was it. Let him do it. That's the same thing I have with Jacob. How long and how wide and how much can I get him attention that the words coming out of his mouth is heard by as many people as possible? That's all I care about. What your job is, you go give him the nomination, you do the delegate thing, right? Yeah, blah, 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 blah. Necessary, but I'm going to try and make your job easier. But that is not my job, because I don't like playing internal politics. I don't care, because I'm going to work on how many ears get to hear his thing. That's it. Can I do that? Am I allowed?
That will be the hard pivot after. We have to get him the nomination first. But yeah, obviously that will be the
no, hard pivot. No, no, I know that's your hard pivot. I'm doing it now.
Well, yeah, my hard pivot. Yeah,
I'm doing it now. That's your thing, man. That's not my job. You know.
But is to answer your concern there, I will say this, and I don't know if you'll find this convincing, but as far as keeping the interests of the goal over the interests of the organization as time goes on, I've been doing this for over 2 years now, and I'm a very limited means. I don't make any money off of this. It comes to a great expense of my time, and the reason I do this is because Ron affected me on a very personal level as well as an intellectual level. And I thought that was how it was for everybody. And it wasn't until years after that I feel like it was more intellectual for most people than personal. And what I mean by personal is, like, I was at a very, very dark point in my life at that time. I mean, I was like 18 years old. I was having serious depression, serious problems at home, and it just felt like I couldn't get away from it. And Ron Paul served as a personal role model for me and the kind of person that I want to be like. So to be in a position now where, you know, I was at Ron Paul's house like last weekend or the weekend before that. We're endorsed by Ron Paul. This is like the honors of my life. You know what I mean? So like,
Paul cured your apathy.
Well, he cured my apathy, but he cured my depression too. That, you know, like he made me see what kind of person I want to be like.
You know, let's delve into that a little bit. I want to talk about that a little bit more. The example that you got from Dr. Paul redirected your efforts and what kind of an adult that you wanted to be. And tell me what you think it was.
Oh, it was his bravery. It was his courage and his consistency. He didn't care what anybody thought about him. He only cared about doing what was right and telling the truth. And I didn't really have a direction at that point, you know, and I didn't know where I wanted to go. I just thought everything was dark, you know, and seeing the light of the truth and somebody who was that brave that it didn't matter the cost to themselves.
You know, I've talked to people about this. I'd like you to, you know, comment on this. How far back did you go in Israel? Did you watch his, you know, speeches from before, read his back stuff, kind of looking for inconsistencies and didn't find it? You know, what was it that you did the research on once you got exposed to him?
Oh, everything. I mean, I didn't post on Daily Paul, but I was a daily Paul reader. I watched everything that I could find on YouTube. I, you know, learned everything I could about him. I mean, I have a book over here that probably I think nobody else probably has ever seen called the Ron Paul Money Book from like 1992. You know, like I got everything. And
well, are you guys going to, you know, we had the Daily Paul. I know Michael Nystrom and for the 12 campaign, they burnt him out. I mean, it was, you know, he did it like you, he did it for the right reasons and it just became a thing. And so he's, whoa, you know, I really had a lot of respect for him and what he sacrificed personally. And it sounds like you're kind of going down the same path. Is there going to be, you know, Daily Jacob or something? I mean, Daily Hornblower or some crap like that?
There should be. That's a good. I hadn't thought of that. That's a good idea, though.
Yeah, they'll probably wind up being. It's kind of Freedom's Phoenix now. Everything he writes, we put up there. But the it is. I'm kind of, you know, interested in what you think your future is going to be. You know, do you have a girlfriend? Are you married? Do you, you know, have a profession? Is this becoming, I mean, what role is this playing in your life?
This is what I want to pursue at this point, because like I said, you can't cut the head off like what was done with Ron Paul. We have to initiate that feedback loop and keep it going. So I think it's going to take me a few years, but frankly, this is what I eventually want to make my gig. I do have a girlfriend. I've been with Emily for 3 years now, over 3 years.
Is she in?
Yes and no. I mean, she is, but she's not involved. You know what I mean? Like, and she wasn't political when we started dating. It's not like it was anything like that. But I actually really like it that she's not involved.
Yeah.
Because
give you a break, man. Give you a break.
Well, one, I need a break. And two, like you said, even at this low level, there's a lot of snakes. There's a lot of animals. And if anybody screwed with her to get to me, I would lose my mind. I like that she's not involved.
Yeah, I'm... You know, the fact that you even said that, that's where they think your weak link is. And so she's got to, you know, be in and understand that, you know, this is, you know, politics is a dirty thing. And we've been pretty insulated from it because we never went after individuals. You know, I would not, like, no matter, I've run for office a gazillion times and, you know, Congress 3 times, U.S. Senate against McCain, Secretary of State twice, a couple of times for state legislature, county recorder, I mean, on and on and on and on and on. And it was always for a reason, but I never went after individuals by name or anything. It was always a philosophy. And the reason is because when you go after politicos by name, they defend their boys and girls.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to come out, and I don't care. You know, I'm like, I don't care. I don't care.
For this chair race last year, and you got to understand, this is, I mean, and I know you know this, but for your audience, this is a completely volunteer position. The party has no money. The party has no power. It's kind of a
rigged.
It could, but my point is it's kind of a rinky-dink position, right? And even despite that, the stuff that happened to my buddy Josh, and he's running for chair again, but the stuff that they did to him, I mean, there was people harassing his baby's mother, harassing his mother, going after his family, fabricating rape charges. He's a deadbeat dad. It was absolutely disgusting. And because we were the new guys on the block and we were a lightning rod, nobody really seemed to care. And so that's kind of,
you know, me an idea. Well, I think nobody cared. I mean, you know, it's, you know, what thing that got me, wasn't it the socialist guy did something and he filed or threatened suit or something, wouldn't they him?
He threatened to do it. I forget what the hell that was.
Whatever it was, that was not good. I mean, that was not, don't do that.
That was the culmination of a
I know,
six
but that
months.
Was not a good, that's what they try and get you to do is something like that. That's the only thing that people remember or heard. That's the only thing I remembered, you know? So I'm just going, yeah, see, they goad you into this stuff. And I'm just like, I don't see Jacob Hornberger being goaded. You know, he's not that type. You know,
he's not going to be the lightning rod that we were. I mean, look.
Oh no, he'll be a lightning rod.
You know what I mean? Well, I'm talking about inside the party. You know what I mean? Like he's pretty affable. He's pretty.
Doesn't
matter. He's got a good demeanor.
Doesn't matter. If you got Nick Sarwark, national chair, going after Tom Woods for mentioning the name Rothbard,
yeah,
I mean, what the hell did you think was going to happen?
Yeah, and the comment that started that all off from Nick was that the Mises Institute is the preferred think tank of Nazis. That's what that was. But but the good news is, and I think this is a byproduct of our effect on the party is, so I was, I forget if it was last weekend or the weekend before now, it's all blending together, but, the weekend before I was at the Ron Paul symposium, and that's why I was at Ron Paul's house. And Nick actually showed up to the symposium, took a picture with Ron and invited him to the convention, and then had a conversation with Jeff Deist. Now, of course, he used it as a photo op for a donor drive. But my point is we've got influential to the point, and because I expect him to spin these things however he can. My point, though, is that we've become important enough, and we've become influential enough to where he sees the wins, and sees
and
that
he doesn't
we
have Bill Weld to promise him billions.
right.
So I know where this goes. I know Nick. All right. Now this is one thing you bring this up. This is another issue that we have. I think Friday Maj Touré is coming on. Now this is Black Guns Matter. He's spoken at two of our Freedom Summits. You know, I like him. He's, you know, got it going on in that was it Philadelphia, I think, right? So yep. He's Black Guns Matter, and he's a black man teaching people about guns in Philadelphia, and he's got he's rocking and rolling and whatnot. He was invited or scheduled to speak at the Libertarian National Convention in Austin this next year, and then uninvited, and that's all I know about it. What the hell was going on?
So we actually recruited him to run. I was with him every step of the way for this campaign. I did a lot of work for
campaign
that campaign.
Campaign for what?
City Council at Large in Philly.
Okay,
that's what he ran for, and you know, it was his first.
How did he do?
Well, compared to what? I guess is the question.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
there hasn't really been any libertarians running for City Council in Philly. He got 5,600 votes, so it was a little underwhelming. I think it was a half of a percent. But again, that's if you look at it politically. If you look at
did he get attention?
Yes, he did.
See, I don't give a crap what the total. I don't trust the computers anyway.
He was froze out. He was froze out of the local media, but he got all kinds of national media. He was on Fox Business several times, and nobody cared about any of the stuff. They just cared that he offended some donor. That's I mean, there's a little more of a story there, but he offended a donor. He insulted a donor, and the insult was public. But what the donor did to disrespect him initially was not public. So the donor. The donor's narrative is the narrative that was adopted. You know what I mean? So nobody really cared. And yeah, that was ultimately used to push him out of the party.
Oh, out of the party? I thought it was just a speaking slot or something.
Well, he had made it known that if you take my keynote, I'm leaving the party. And that was up front. Everyone knew it. And that's what they did anyway.
Okay, well, go ahead. I mean, let's not leave the audience hanging, man. What the hell happened? I don't know. I mean, I can ask him, but I mean, you know, I'd rather you get it now. Everybody's got. I got two.
I want to try to do the nut of the shell version here. So please. He had a phone call with a donor to the party, and
why? Why was he on the phone with him?
To get information as far as running, like advice, and to ask about, you know, donating to the campaign. And but apparently the donor answered the phone like this: "Just so you know, I'm not going to give you any money. I don't believe you can win." So naturally, they got defensive. Maj made a Facebook post detailing the situation, but didn't name any names, right? Well, then the donor comes on the post, outs himself, tries to call out Maj. Maj calls him a cock blower. And you know, I was at dinner with him when this broke out, and I tried to get him to, like, calm down and think about it, but, you know, he was pissed off, and he reacted. And I think we all have done that.
So, cock blower is, you know, that was it.
Yeah, now he's homophobic.
Okay, whatever. Is the guy gay? Is the guy gay?
No. But, well, at least not that I know of.
Okay, well, whatever. So he pissed him off, and he reacted, and the guy had weight with the National Party to have him taken off. Why? Is he a big giant donor or something? What?
Yeah, he's a donor to the party.
Well, I don't mean nothing. I mean big giant. I bet, you know, is it $1,000? He's a lifetime member. Is that it? What?
He's a big donor to the party. He's a top 10. Yeah, top 10 or top 5 donor to the party.
Oh, okay.
And then even he's even donated to a really good cause, and to the state party out here in Pennsylvania. So, you know, even the state leadership here took his back over Maj. And basically the whole argument that I was trying to make is, like, look, I'm not asking you to endorse everything he says. I'm not asking you to like the guy, because they didn't like him and whatever. I'm not asking you to like the guy. I'm asking you, though, to tell me why your personal feelings that you don't like him are more important than the fact that he's getting on Fox Business, and more important than the fact that he's getting in, you know, a main stage slot at CPAC, and more important than, you know, getting invited to huge two-way rallies, and more important than getting endorsed by the GOA and all the shit that never happens to our local level candidates. And
well, no, I don't want to excuse people just because, you know, for they get the attention or because they're a big donor. You know, I'm looking at this ouch quit it. That's just ouch quit it. And I'm just ouch quit it. And it, you know, for a donor to throw his weight around like that as a donor, that's not good either. I don't feel warm and fuzzy about that.
And but, in the end, Daniel Hayes, who is the person that invited Maj to be the keynote, he's the chair of the convention committee. In the end, he actually unilaterally removed Maj from being the speaker because he knew that the support on the committee had left. So
he just did it without the committee because the committee was kind of for leaving Maj on.
Right. And there was a vote after the fact where they ratified what Daniel did, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's
and Daniel is the same guy.
I bet Maj had him on quite a bit, know him a little bit. He's, you know, he's from Philly. You know, I mean, right, you know, right. I mean, yeah. You don't go around, you know, pissing people off. They're going to not, you're dissing me kind of. Well, I don't see him as an embarrassment. I don't see him as violent. I don't see him as anything but, you know, love of his community. And he wants to share what. He's an asset. So that's too bad.
He's absolutely an asset. And he's even. What people don't know is he does these free workshops around the country in inner cities for Black Guns Matter for people to come and talk about, you know, gun rights, gun safety, gun history, and conflict resolution. And
yeah, he has replica guns, you know, he shows them out. They actually get the touchy-feely. Yep. He goes through the process, the philosophy, the law, everything. It's a powerful message.
Right, and he's opened these workshops to Libertarian Party candidates in the areas that he's at to come and talk and spread their message. And
not anymore.
Right. And that's what I mean. It's just absurd. And to me, it sends a really bad message because of you have to conform to our social norms or something like that, or you can't be a leader in this party, or it doesn't matter what positives you bring. If you upset people or offend people, it just seems like PC bullshit to me. And we're supposed to be shattering the status quo, not like endorsing it, you know?
Well, I don't want to be, I just don't like, you know, I just don't like part. I mean, there's so many reasons why I don't like this stuff, because I've been through this so many times, and I just, it's ouch quit it, stuff I just freaking don't care. And, but, you know, it's important to them, and I'm, whatever, you know, that's why, you know, Bumper, I mean, I'm sorry, Jacob. Yeah, Scott Horton's on my butt. Quit calling him Bumper. Do you guys call him, you know him as Bumper, or?
I'm not good enough friends with him yet to call him Bumper.
Well, I didn't, you know, I, you know, hell, that was, I thought that was his name for a long time, you know, but, but the, Jacob, you know, it's Jacob Hornberger. I give him some respect, you know, for Jacob Hornberger, but, it's, he's been around a long time and he had a big influence on me, in the early 90s. And, he's one of those calm, cool, collected, well-informed, well-read, well-educated. He's an attorney by trade and, Future Freedom Foundation, you know, that, and I remember him going around and having sponsors and raising money back in the day in the early 90s, and people were perfectly willing to give him the money. And, our first Freedom Summit that we had in 2001, he was the keynote speaker. And we had him again talking about immigration in like 05, 06, you know, before the Levolution started. And when immigration was just getting to be a big thing, and he's like, open border, open border, open border. Now, open border position, this is one of the things that, you know, Scott Horton and I were going on about. He's like, he shouldn't just come out and write out flat, say, in the beginning, open border. He needs to kind of soften the message or something. And I'm going, I don't want to, you know, say it. You'll just say it, and then you can, they usually when you say it up front, they want you to defend it. If you try and, you know, hem-hawing around in the beginning, they don't even care what you say, you know. But on the issue of open border, wasn't he just on Tom Wood's show or something and brought that up and people had something to say about something? What do you know about that?
Well, there's two things.
Well, tell me what happened, because I don't even know. I just heard rumors or something.
I don't know that there's anything that happened. It's just any time a candidate takes one side or the other on abortion and borders, it's always something, right? It's always a thing, because those are, as far as the intra LP thing, those are wedge issues. They're always the issues that divide libertarians.
Which is why Ron Paul not being, you know, you're not a woman till you had an abortion at 14 or something. You know, Ron Paul is like considered pro-life when he ran for president in 88 as a libertarian. So this has always been a thing,
right,
where generally his is like, hey man, you'll bring it down. It's sure as hell not a federal issue. So when these guys make these arguments on these kinds of things, and Jacob is Catholic, okay? So I'm not sure what his, you know, abortion issue is, or, you know, have him fully articulate it. I mean, I'm sure it's, you know, not, you know, everybody's got to have an abortion and you're not a woman or something. But the thing is I like to hear the argument. That's why a lot of people in talk radio, they don't like talking about, you know, like immigration or abortion or some of these controversial vaccines or, you know, war or some of these controversial issues, because, but I do. Bring it on, bring it on, bring it on. And I can make the argument for both sides, pro and anti. The problem is that, do you use libertarian principle in your argument? This is what I know Jacob is going to do. Doesn't matter what his position is. He's going to use a freedom, individualist, down to the individual, proper role of government argument to make whatever point he is. I guarantee you that.
Yeah. And that's what we need right now, because we've had enough of the imposters. We've had enough of the moderators and the watering down. We need the revolution back, and we need it to be something that keeps going.
Do you think, see, that was one thing. I know that, you know, I've been approached by, well, even after when Ron Paul pulled out in 08, we go to the Denver Libertarian Convention, it was Bob Barr, and they just thought, oh yeah, it's going to be the Bob Barr Levolution, right, Ernie? I'm like, God, you guys so freaking don't get it, man. Now that it's not even possible. You think this is collectivized in some way. That's the point. You know, here in Arizona, the politicians, it's always Ernie and his people. I'm like, God, man, you freaking don't get it. There is no Ernie's people. That's the point. You know, if they're going to make any difference. You know, it's just, they're so dumb. So the thing is that I'm going, all right, then it's 12. Well, we got some Ron Paul Evolution again. All right, cool. Wasn't the same as 08, you know, but I did whatever I could to help people. I, you know, kind of had its own thing. All right. Then it's Rand Paul. Here comes Rand Paul. Oh, Ernie's got back. I go, no, that's not. Well, you guys, if it takes off, it takes off. Use it. Don't use it. It's not copyrighted. I don't give a crap. I retain, you know, just enough ownership to make sure nobody has ownership of the logo. I don't give a crap. Do whatever you want. But it doesn't take off because it's not what the people want. So I'm going, what am I going to do for Jacob if it turns into a Levolution, like what you're talking about, we need to have another Levolution, do you think it's going to be the logo? It's going to be the same thing? It's going to be a spontaneous order of the support and the people come out, the woodwork for the same? Or do you even want it the same? What do you think is going to happen?
More than the branding, I'm concerned about the feeling in the community. That's the main thing. Yep. Yep. That's what needs to be replicated more than the branding or anything. I mean, it's a different time. He is going to have to, you know, incorporate the internet, and he is going to have to do, you know, live streams and ask me anything and all this kind of stuff. But the main thing is the feeling and the unity, because that was the thing that pissed me off so bad a few years after Ron Paul, is because it was kind of cool at first, right? Like all this stuff sprouted out, the Free Thought Project sprouted up. Ben Swan sprouted up. That's when Adam Kokesh became a personality, and he was doing the Man on the Street videos, and you know, all these different things started popping up. And that's when we all started having debates about minarchism versus anarchism, and what type of hyphenated anarchism are you? And it was really cool because it was like
education
and intellectual inquiry. Somewhere along the way, though, I feel like we lost faith. We lost faith in what we actually believe, because the energy that was coalesced around Ron Paul just went in a bunch of different directions and didn't have any results after that. And we all started stagnating. And then it seemed like those debates started turning into fights, and those hyphens started becoming lines we've gotten really divided. And I fundamentally think that the main thing there is faith. I think we've lost faith in what we believe.
Well, I tell you what happened, and from my opinion, and I anticipate it was, again, you know, whenever you create an organization, sooner or later it becomes more important than the reason you created it. And, you know, it was Campaign for Liberty. When they did Campaign for Liberty, and, you know, behind the scenes there was discussions, and Michael Nystrom and Trevor Lyman and I went to Washington and met with some of the guys that, you know, whatever. And this was right before he pulled in 2008, before the Texas convention. And it was like April, I think, or something. And we went to Washington. I remember, you know, Peter Schiff and his brother were there. And we, you know, went through the tour of the Capitol. And Peter Schiff's brother, I think it's Lester, he was awesome. And it was like, you know, forget the tour guide, man. He was telling us everything. And it was cool. During that meeting, what happened was this. It was very clear to me that Rand and the guys, they wanted to do what you're talking about and have this continue after. Well, they got a big database. They raised billions of dollars outside of them. They still raised a lot of money, but they took the money at the end of the campaign. That's why they stopped it, is to take and roll that money over. There's some laws that allow them to do this into an organization. Well, they created Campaign for Liberty, and they took, you know, like, I don't know, $6 million, $8 million, whatever it was, and kind of seeded that with that. And they wanted, this too could be yours. And, you know, I'm going, nah, I'm not interested. And I already know where this goes. You're going to take all these, for a year and a half or more, these people have been busting their ass doing exactly what they wanted, the way they wanted, without any direction and whatever, and the results were whatever they wanted. And I go, you're wanting them to, now they're going to pay $35 or whatever it was into this organization, and then you're going to tell them what to do. Let me think for a second. That ain't going to work, okay? And then Colorado had some state, I think it was a U.S. Senate candidate, and Campaign for Liberty spent like $350,000 on helping them do whatever the heck it was, and everybody, and he was some warmongering piece of crap, and it was a deal with the Republicans, and we're done, okay? So they were thinking that stoked the fires and opposition. I didn't do anything other than I put some of the stories on Freedom's Feet. I didn't even read them. I already knew this was going to happen. So then they're like, oh, Ernie, you did. Hey, man, don't shoot the messenger. You know, it's because you created an organization. So that's why I'm warning the Mises Caucus. You get to that position to where you're deciding which candidates get what money. You're already screwed, okay? So how do you even determine that? You know, is it an issue? Is it an initiative? Is it, and then how do you, because I've seen this fight going on inside the Libertarian Party. It was always who got the money from the whatever. Blah. I give you this. Here's one thing that was the most successful fundraising the Libertarian Party ever did. Most supported, most, which is, of course, why they never did it again. Ron Krickenberger out of Georgia, I think it was Atlanta or something like that. He's passed away, you know, years ago, but he was one of the guys that would raise money and they would, you know, spend it on, I don't know, ballot access or do this or do that and some whatever. They came up with this idea, and this is like early days of the, you know, God forbid you had an email. I mean, you know, this is back in the night. It wasn't broadband or anything. And what they did is they said, look, this is what we're going to do. We're going to put this full page ad in the New York Times. It's going to cost $1 billion, $1 trillion. Yeah, I know it was 80,000. I know it was a lot of money. We're going to put this full page ad in, and it's going to be, we are against the drug war. It was an anti-drug war signed by, and this is why, and people said, and cause and whatever, and donate to that, and we do it. Boom! The money came in, do that. Boom! It's out there, and libertarians get all kinds of attention. Peace out, and we're done. Well, you'd think they want to do that again. Yeah, they want to do it again this way. Give us a general fund money, and then maybe we'll do this kind of thing.
It is kind of curious after a while where it's like they always make the worst available decision.
Because they want control. You know, it's always about control. And the people that get in, control. And that was my optimism. I saw it in Orlando. When Orlando, so this is two conventions, like, what, 3 years or so?
2015, so, I guess, 2016.
Yeah, so you had in Orlando, and I saw, and I was, and that's when we found out that my senior editor, Pal Gamel, had just passed away. And he was a hardcore, no compromise libertarian along with me, you know, all this time. And I was thinking, right when I found out that he died, was that he should be here. He'd finally get to see it happen, where you had over a third of the convention was anarchist libertarian, if they understood what was going on. And I'm going, man, it was a lot different from when, you know, it was, you know, 10%. You know, and you purists, you Rothbardians, as if it was a bad thing. You know, somebody called me a Rothbardian in the early days. I didn't even know what the hell they're talking about. I came into this movement from activism in the street and stuff. It wasn't from, you know, how many policy papers I could read, you know. And a lot of people have come more the way that I did originally through Ron Paul's campaigns.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And like I said, it was part of a community. And that's what we've lost. We're not a community anymore. You know, and that's what we need to get back.
Organizations don't make communities. I just want you to know that right up front.
Movements do.
Yeah, movements. And if you can serve the movement. See, this is what, you know, they want to go to everybody and say, we need your $35 and your work, and we're going to tell you what to do to serve the organization for so we can do the movement of whatever the hell. No, if you just go, give us resources and we'll serve the movement, if you become a service of the movement and not particular cans or whatever, the movement, it'll flood in. What the hell did you think of what Lovevolution was about? Each one, there's so many of us that had gazillions of dollars go through our fingers doing stuff of people that just wanted to help because we allowed them. We said, look, what form I got to fill out? Form? Now, you want to declare your independence? You think you need a form? You know? Dummy? So this is why I'm wanting to help you guys, but not by in the organization thing. You know, I'm not like that. I want to just help and a bunch of friends of it help. What can we do to help you do what? You know, I mean, I know you're kind of favoring Jacob Hornberger now, but, you know, you're not necessarily like full-on endorsement, or if you even could. So I'm just going,
We will be endorsing a candidate. Like, and most of the board is very supportive, and most of our audience is very supportive. Yeah. But in the interest of fairness, I can't say that we endorse him yet.
Yeah. Well, this is like Jacob always saying. I was asking him like last May. Sounds like you're running for president. Oh, wouldn't be prudent at this juncture in the FEC and blah, blah, blah. Sounds more like you're running for president, you know? So I'm going, all right. Sounds more like you're endorsing Jacob. So what can people do? I mean, what do you need? Because if you say, just give me money and sign up for the whatever, I don't care. I mean, what's the money for? What do you really need?
So what we're doing right now is, so I laid out earlier that we're using money for local level candidates around the country, as well as issue coalitions around the country. However, election season just passed. Right now, it's all eyes on convention. So we're trying to get tables and volunteers and people out to the state convention so that they can become delegates, so that they can go to the national convention in Austin in May and support Jacob, support Joshua Smith, support new leadership. see the changes in the platform that they want to see to keep us a principled party.
Okay, and Joshua Smith, you've already made the decision on that. You know, what if Jacob doesn't like Joshua? I mean, why Josh? Why are you linking them? Why is there why?
Well, we've already endorsed him for chair, and we're trying to run a slate of leadership candidates as well. And we have very supportive state chairs. We have people who are supportive that are on the LNC. You know, we're trying to influence the whole shebang.
So what do you think Nick Sarwark is thinking now? I mean, he's moved to New Hampshire. He's even talking about registering Republican to vote for Weld to do some weird crap.
Yeah, he did say that.
Now, what the hell is that? I mean, he didn't want to be chair anymore or what?
We don't know. I mean, right now the signs point, if I had to guess, I would say that he doesn't want to. I think they're scrambling.
He's going to be Bill Weld's campaign chair.
I think that's not impossible.
Yeah. See, I knew he was doing something weird in New York.
It seems to me though that they are afraid of us. They know, because I think they're used to people coming in, them acting the way they act, disgusting people away, frustrating people, burning people out, and then they just kind of throw their hands up, and that has served them for a long time. They've never dealt with somebody like me where there's nothing you can do to me. I will get it. You know what I mean? Eventually. And I will not stop.
Okay. This is what, you know, Drew Phillips is, he's known for Bitcoin, not bombs, and so on. He's a good friend. And he made this comment about the Libertarian Party. He goes, you know what the Libertarian Party convention is? He goes, it's like the high school dance. It's where everybody goes to find out where the real party is with the cool people. Okay. And that's what you guys can represent. You're the cool guys. You know, they're just going to the party to find you.
Yeah, I mean, that, like, you had mentioned that bash, and that's what we called it, Take Human Action bash. That's our tagline, Take Human Action. And so we had, you know, Ron Paul sent us a video, and that's where he endorsed this. We had Tom Woods, we had crypto speaker, you know, people who headed up crypto companies that were there. We had Bob Murphy, we had Scott Horton, we had, you know, it was the cool kids party.
Yeah, no, I went and said, yo, what's up? You know, I fell asleep and went, you know, kind of later in the afternoon, but, you know, it was a going concern.
Right. And the only reason that we wanted to have it at the convention, we tried to rent the largest room in the convention hotels, in the convention hotel. They blocked us. They wouldn't let us. They wouldn't let us do it there. They didn't want to build these bridges. So, and then even after they blocked us and forced us to go down the street, I tried to say, all right, can you send a table over so that we can recruit members to your party? They didn't even do that. These people are threatened. They're definitely threatened.
I was there when this was guy. I could feel it. You know, I know, like, they were not grinning. And right. So I was kind of, you know, this last, you know, New Orleans, I was kind of neutral. I'm just, all right, I'm just seeing where this is going, because I've been doing this a long time, and I can see what I was really looking for is not what everybody else looks for. I'm looking for what is the philosophy and the leanings of the delegates. How many delegates are there representing what, you know, I believe? It's gotten, when it's like almost none, it's gotten well over a third. It's getting even more. It's like 40% or something.
It's got to be more than that now.
Yeah,
because,
no,
like,
we
are the biggest recruiters in the party.
Yeah, no. I'm with you, brother. I'm telling you, I just want the audience to know, I've been watching this for decades, and I'm telling you, all the stuff that early on we've been pushing for and pimping and running and because and making fun of and whatever the heck we've been doing, set an example here in Arizona, because there's a bunch of stuff always comes out of Arizona. A lot of the stuff people don't even remember. The most, you know, a lot of people, there's been a lot of stuff that you don't even know it was us that you know about. Mm-hmm. But Levolution's probably one of the big ones. But the big thing is, yeah, that is the big one, but this continuation that you're talking about in the party to get the emotion, the feeling of that, it was because of the spontaneous order. Can you keep that? Can you serve it as opposed to trying to be the center of it? If you try and be the center of it, it's not going to work. If you serve it, it's going to be different.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it all depends on what we go on to achieve ultimately. I mean, if it just flames out,
how many minds you can free? I don't give a crap. Right. You know, it's just how many minds can you free? That's it. That's it. That's right. It. That's it. That's it. That's it. It's
and the more we free, the more will come in, and the more it just, yep, and it keeps going.
What do you think you're up against? Okay. Oh, yeah.
Well, that was, it's funny you should ask, because I was going to say, I'll make this last point, and then I kind of have to wrap. But, well, we already know that Gary Johnson and Ron Nielsen and Weld and all of them, they flew people in, they packed the delegation, yeah. And even despite their efforts, and despite the fact that there's been a demographic shift, you know, so we'll see how bad it is now. But my point is they did what they had to do to get that win. You know what I mean? And that probably took money, and it took hotel rooms, and it took stuff like that to get people out. But even despite that effort, a shift of 30 delegates would have changed the whole thing. I mean, Larry Sharp lost the VP. He would have been vastly superior to Weld by like 15, I think. So despite all of that effort, and despite the fact that we didn't have the demographic influx that we have since had, that small of a shift could have changed it. So it matters. It matters. You have to get out there. I mean, it can't be a passive thing.
Remember when Alicia had Bill Weld up there and saying, well, these people just want to know that you're not going to stab him in the back. And he kind of goes,
and then she stabbed everybody in the back.
Yeah, he goes, yeah. I'm a national member of a national member of a national member. And I'm going, he didn't say it. Say it. Say it. That was me. And the reason that happened was in 96, Harry Brown wouldn't say that he wouldn't take federal matching funds because we were big against that too. And he finally goes, okay, I won't take matching funds, and the crowd roared. Well, Nick Sarwark knew I wasn't going to stop, and he came up and saved him, and that's where Bill Weld came buddies with Nick. Here's the guy that saved me, and kind of, you know, and here's my billionaire friends. So I've known the story and how this works from back in the, and it takes brave people at the right time to stand up, or sometimes to stand up, you just got to sit down, you know, whatever it takes. So I'm with you guys. I know you got to go. I got to go to the bathroom. But so I know you got to go. We need to talk more in the future. Yes, I do remember you from the Nexus Earth Conference in Aspen. And I wish you all the luck. You know, I want to make sure that we can help serve you, helping everybody else instead of them helping create your organization to whatever. Be of service and you'll get all the resources you ever wanted. I guarantee it.
So if I could just plug one website, it's takehumanaction.com. It's our one-stop shop for you to see everything that we're doing, and you can pick how you want to get involved. Do you want to give money? Do you want to look at our guide if you've never been involved in party politics before, our beginner's guide to the LP, if you want to join the email list. All of the stuff that we do is right there. And that's not even we have a podcast called Ask an Austrian, where we get user questions from the crowd, and we have economists from the Mises Institute answer them on a monthly basis on video. There's all kinds of stuff that we're doing. And I do think that Jacob Thornberger can be the continuation of the Ron Paul revolution, and that's what we need. So,
okay, I'm going to show my ignorance. I got it up for the audience to see right here. It has, you know, Rothbard on the right, and then Mises, and then Ron Paul, and who's the guy on the left? I don't recognize him.
Hayek.
Okay. Yeah, he doesn't look that way in the rap video. Hey, you know, thanks, guys. I appreciate your work, and we'll do what we can to help.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for having me.